welcome to this episode of Why Pals Tales from the Superyacht Laundry. I would like to introduce you to our next guest, which is Georgie Lindsay. She is a lady that has, I don't want to say not gone the traditional route, because there's more ladies going towards the bridge, but perhaps not many of them have actually started in the commercial shipping sector. So we wanted to get her on to get her perspective on the yachting industry and how women can maybe see the industry slightly differently than the traditional routes and roles that are on there. So welcome to our podcast, Georgie.
Thanks, Shay. Nice to find
I hope you've been enjoying the sunshine. It's pretty warm in the UK at the moment.
It is. It's 25 degrees out here.
It feels weird, doesn't it?
Which is very rare, that's for sure.
Especially in Liverpool. So obviously we always start with the same question. I think it would be better to say, when did you make the decision to go to sea?
Well, that started back when I was 16, 17. I decided that I never wanted to work in an office. That's when you were choosing your options in school, and you had to decide about going to university, and I just never seen myself going to work in an office every day job. And I looked at being an airline pilot, and I also looked at into like careers at sea. And then I was on a cruise with my family when I was 16. And they say everything happens for a reason, but I was in the Caribbean on a cruise ship, and it was pouring down with rain. So they offered a tour of the cruise of the boat.
Oh, wow.
And only because it was raining, and I did the tour of the boat, the ship, went to the galley, went to the engine room, and finally finished up in the bridge on the tour. And I got speaking to one of the officers, and I said to him, I'm choosing my options at the moment. I've been looking at different careers. I don't really want to do an office job. And he wrote down the website for me, Ocean Opportunities, which it was originally called, and gave me the companies who you could go work for: Shell, BP, Princess Cruises. And then from there, I went home, had a look online, did the application, and luckily enough, got an opportunity with Carnival UK, who ran the P&O Cruises, Seabourn, Cunard, and also partnered with Princess Cruises.
So when you were, like, obviously before, when you're looking, you were already looking at quite technical jobs. Like, you were definitely not going to be in an office, and like most women would be put off a kind of like airline pilot. Like, that's a lot of technical stuff. Were you good at science? Like, what was, you know, what did you have an astral interest in engineering? Like,
I originally had interest in languages, so I was doing Spanish, French back in A levels. But just from a young age, I knew it was just something in me. And then with A-levels, I chose science, and I did physics and maths with Spanish for A-level. And then to obviously the opportunity to go into engineering, airlines, shipping, whatever I decided to do, it gave me more of an option, having done those choices at A-level.
You wanted to travel, probably.
Travel, for sure. It was funny because when I was 18, I applied to cruise ships, and I said, I'll do any job on a cruise ship. I said, whether it's a nanny, working in a shop, a masseuse, anything. And the company turned around and said to me, you need to go to do these courses called STCWs. And I said, at the time I was 18, just out of school, never had the money. And I said, okay, I'm not going to do that. And they said, well, also, we prefer people over the age of 21. So I went to live in Madrid for a year instead. And then after living in Madrid is when I got the job with Carnival UK. And I look back now and laugh and think, they told me, no, go do your STCWs.
That's mad, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's mad. So I think, you know, you're sounding like travel was the main driver for yep. whatever you were going to do. Like, you wanted to get off this grey island.
Yeah, I even remember trying to convince my parents at 10 years old to emigrate.
They didn't fall for it then, obviously.
No, they didn't.
So when you got your position with Carnival, was that to do bridge straight away? Like, what was the position that you actually ended up getting to start with?
Yeah, so when I got Carnival, it was a full UK cadetship. So the cadet program runs over a 3.5 year period, and you're employed by a shipping company, Carnival being a cruise company, and you sign up. It's a government sponsored, so your courses are paid for and your tutoring accommodation and your life basically is paid for over those 3.5 years. And then you go to a college around the country in the UK, and I was in Wasatch, and it's like a sandwich course. So we would spend 4 or 5 months down in Wasatch training, completing our courses, short courses, exams, and then maybe go on board for 6 months, back to college again for another 5-6 months. And you did that repeatedly over the 3.5 years. And then at the end of the 3.5 years, completed your final exams, your written exams, you did an oral exam with the MCA, and then you walked away with your Officer of the Watch unlimited license.
How many females were on your course?
So we were in a HND class, and we started off about 60 across two classes. It was 5 or 6 females at the beginning, and then I mean, it was 3 of us that finished completely in the end, that finished the course. But altogether, half of the class, what started, never finished.
It's quite an intense experience. There's a lot to remember. I suppose it doesn't fit everybody.
I was the lucky one. I got to travel the Caribbean and all the nice places around the world. But some of the guys ended up on oil tankers or bulk carriers and in the back end of China, Russia, Africa, wherever the boat took them.
What do you think was your experience different because you're a woman? Like, what was your experience with doing a course, obviously, that's predominantly male? Obviously, we're talking, what year was this that you did you started?
It was 2011.
Right.
Yeah. I really enjoyed being with guys and being in a class of guys. I'm a woman myself, but it was just laughing, joking, banter. Guys taking, like, making jokes out of guys, playing tricks on guys, like, it was
right. I was like being at school again.
Yeah, it was. But yeah, no, personally, as a woman, I know a lot of people ask about if they had any problems being a woman in the industry, commercial or yachting, but I've been lucky enough that all the people who've worked with me or around me have only ever been supportive. So I can never say that I've had any problems.
It's nice to know that, obviously, in a male-dominated industry, especially when you're starting out, you know, it could, you know, if there was anything negative, it could put you off completely. But I have heard fantastic things about Wasatch, that it's quite a good place to study in the first place, and it's your ticket around the world, I suppose.
Yeah, At the beginning, it was quite, because it's quite a remote place, but it was for young students of 18, 19, 20 years old. It was in the middle of the country, far from any nightlife, and we'd have to go into Southampton and to go out or have our weekend fun was always a bit of a drive away. But it had its own qualities, and I look back now and I appreciate the time being there.
So when you, obviously you're doing, so you do a certain amount of stints on board, and like you said, you were on cruise ships, and luckily enough, not on a tanker. That would have been glorious, I'm sure. What did it feel like when you, can you remember back, like, what was it like being on board for that first stint on a cruise ship?
I still to this day I remember I flew out on New Year's Eve, what would be 2012, joined the cruise ship. It must have been 6 o'clock in the evening before the New Year's party and everything that was going on. And I just felt a million miles away from what I'd known in England, surrounded by officers, captains, people from all over the world. It opened my eyes a lot at the time, but it's something I got used to quickly. Every day was a different destination. Grand Turk, Barbados, Antigua. It was just, you can't... I woke up every day thinking, how on earth am I doing this job?
So there were no particular challenges in the experience? Like, what would you say, there was a tough bit, or do you just, were like a duck to water?
Yeah, it was definitely tough. A little bit of duck to water, but I think everything in life, it comes with its own challenges. I did miss my family. I did miss my boyfriend at the time. And you just take it day by day and step by step. And yeah, it's never, never easy.
No. But you are going cool places. Yeah. So obviously you're on cruise ships, racking up insane sea miles, I imagine.
Yeah.
Your book was pretty full. When did you think about making a change?
It would have been... So I had a friend in the class in Wasatch. So he had changed, flipped the other way. So he'd been a deckhand and a bosun in yachting. And then he saw the opportunity to go and get his unlimited ticket.
Right.
So he used to tell us all of the stories of yachting and what the life was like, the people you met, and the opportunities. And then as I started travelling around the world on the cruise ships, we would be alongside, I remember being alongside first time Eclipse in St. Martin, and our first trip into Monaco on a cruise ship. And then the yachting and the cruising industry kind of started to overlap. And I think it was end of 2015 is when I thought, okay, I'm gonna make the jump. And I left my job with P&O Cruises and started looking what was originally for a deckhand role a deckhand in 2016. Which was quite difficult at the time. And I can see now how much the industry's progressed in those 8 years of how many female deckhand jobs there are available now compared to 8 years ago.
So even with all of your qualifications, you applied for jobs straight out the gate as a deckie?
Yeah. Speaking to the agents, when I went down to Antibes, went to Blue Water, went to Hill Robinson, went around on team. And they said, your CV is great, you've got the ticket. But they said to me, you don't know the experience, what you need to have on deck to lead the deck as maybe a second or a chief. And to me, that was, to be honest, it was fine. I never had any issues with it, and I really enjoyed it. And it was valuable going forward when I did become a second and a chief. Because as you say, you can't lead without knowing what you do need to do as a deckie.
No, you've got chamois training then.
I did.
How was that? Because obviously, you know, you're bridge on a cruise ship. You definitely wouldn't have done lines on a cruise ship because they're a little bit big.
Yeah.
What was it like, you know, apart from getting, you know, sunburnt nose with the line there, probably?
No, it was, I was very, obviously, working commercial, you got a lot of bridge time. I knew radars and GPSs and filling out logbooks like the back of my hand, having been trained that way. But it was a new experience and a new adventure on deck. And also getting to know the guest experience, which you don't get the same commercially. And it was being a lot more hands-on with like jet skis, tenders. Everybody in yachting knows the standard day of setting up in the morning setup, jet skis out, tenders out, guests ashore. That was nothing I'd ever done before.
So how long did you last as a deckie? Please tell me you ended up getting promoted pretty quickly.
No, I did. It was a season. At the end of the season, I got promoted to the second officer.
That's what, you know, that makes me feel good about it. Because to be honest, you know, it's the hard part of those roles, you know, is probably more the study. You know, you can pick up how to clean a deck and run a fender and all of that stuff pretty quickly. But it's nice to know that they got you in a position of power and using your knowledge wisely. I think that's good.
It was nice doing both, to be honest. As the second, you did get that little bit of responsibility. And you were also a lot more involved with like garbage record books, GMDSS, drills. You had more of a challenge to your day. But then me personally, just the way I am, I like to do the office jobs, tick the boxes for management and flags. And then I like to go outside and scrubbing teeth, wash down, get in the tender, go ashore, like, but I still like to do both.
So, what would you, before we go on to your exit strategy, because obviously you're still currently in the industry, what would you say to a, you know, a 16-year-old right now that's considering, you know, doing, you know, maybe going to Wasatch or whatever, what would your advice be to your 16-year-old self?
I think I'd have, well, I recently I worked with a deckhand on my last vessel, previous summer, and he just been new to the industry, done a few months on a yacht, and then he'd seen this, oh, I can go commercial, I can go yachting. And he said to me, Georgie, what should I do? And I'd never like to push someone one way or the other. But he did end up going commercial. And I think with regards to the training you get from the bridge, it's always good to have, it's instilled or drummed into you daily. So when you do turn up on a yacht, you learn to pick up the washdowns and the fenders and the tender driving that you can pick up on the job daily. And also the way yachts are moving at the moment, 1900 meters, the 3000 gross ton mark, with an unlimited ticket. A lot of boats now, 100, 120, 140, 160 meter boats. You have a wider job opportunity with an unlimited ticket.
Well, the yachts are only getting bigger.
Yeah.
Which technically, you know, when you start getting to 190 metres or whatever it is, that's technically a cruise ship. Like, that's not really yachting anymore. It's, you know, you've got your own cruise ship. You're doing very well in life to be able to do that. Since I was in the industry, the size of them, you know, the amount of 90 meter vessels back in, you know, 2011 was, you know, nothing compared to what it is now. I feel like the standard size that they're building most of the time is at least 90 and then above, which, like you said, creates more job opportunities and the crossover for... I think when you're getting to vessels that size, that's, you know, it all needs to get stricter. Would you agree? Like, everything gets stricter. It's a, you know, it's a big old thing to move around. So your safety, everything is just, you know, a lot more rigid, I suppose.
One of the things that I've found, obviously, I've only been in yachting 8 years compared to, like, yourself and a lot of the captains I've worked with. But there is such a crossover now between larger vessels trying to still keep up with the yachting standards and owners' demands and requests, and then also trying to keep up with flag and Lloyd's and commercial registrations, that they're merging together, they're meeting together.
No. Do you think it's a good thing, the commercial influence on the yachting industry?
I definitely think it's a good thing, just for, as I said, when I joined my first boat, hours of rest, people jumping in tenders, people hanging off cranes, hanging over the side, there wasn't so much enforcement on crew's welfare, crew's safety. So, yeah, I do think it's a good thing that it's been a... I think it's combining the two. And yachting would never exist without people who have money to buy yachts. And we would be out of a job. But at the same time, we've still got to abide by the regulations and make sure the crew are safe, well slept, can go up the mast safely. So I think there's still work to be done in the industry to merge the two together.
So tell us a little bit about life on board for you now. What position are you, the dizzy heights of?
My last yacht was captain, and then the yacht before that I was the chief officer and relief captain.
What's it like being a captain?
Great.
No, are you a control freak?
I have to say, the people I work with would say no. But I do like to be involved in the boat, in the operations, in the yacht and the operations. Very much involved with the guest operations, making sure they get good service, making sure the crew are looked after, making sure that just as a whole, I really love the job, whether it's a chief officer or a captain. I love the operation of a yacht and the waking up every day of where we're going to anchor, how are we keeping people entertained, let's take the tender for a cruise around Amalfi. It's that type of get up, go get your job type of mindset. But
so obviously you're a captain, that means you can park. You can go completely against the grain of what people say about women. You can park in any weather.
I get plenty of jokes about that, don't worry.
I just love it that there's actually a woman out there that's like, yeah, I can park, you know. I wouldn't want to, you know. I used to get really petrified about managing a fender, let alone actually parking a vessel. Because we've come in, you know, it's like different marinas. Have you got a favourite marina? Because I remember one of the boats that I was on coming into Cannes, and we literally, you force your way in.
Yeah.
So like you're fender to fender, you're rolling the fenders as you squidge yourself in. And I'm like, I can't believe this is actually happening, because if my fender misses, it's like, oh, look, there's 200 grand's worth of bat damage. Do you have a favourite marina you like to park in?
I enjoyed Monaco, my first captain. I remember Monaco being in Europe, and then over in St. Martin, they obviously going through the bridge. and I was the chief at the time, and we'd been running in and out of St. Martin, turning around with charters and the owner. And then he said to me, okay, you can do it. And I was like, hang on a minute, I'm driving onto St. Martin Bridge here. Like, you've seen the stories and the accidents that happen, and there's a lot to take into account with the wind. And it was just the, I stood for a second, and it's like, hold your nerves, you can do it. But the St. Martin Bridge drive out was definitely one that made my legs shake. And after I'd done it, I was standing there driving, the captain standing next to me, and I could feel the emotion welling up, and I'm trying not to cry. And they say about being a woman, I'm like, I'm not crying.
But
I'm
not crying.
Proud of myself. Standing there shaking. But no, definitely St. Martin's up there on the list.
Have you ever crashed the boat? Do you want to admit that on camera?
Yeah, no.
have you lost your no claims bonus?
No. Yeah, oh, all the paint is I was on a 90 meter about last year, and she'd had a top to bottom brand new paint job, and it was coming out of the dry dock, and I was taken out of the dry dock. We did a sea trial and then back into MB92 in Barcelona. I said to the deck crew, this is a brand new paint job, fresh, like 2 weeks old. Make sure that every fender covering every corner. So yeah, but no, it all went successfully.
Well, that's good. It is, you know, we all love those videos of watching people crash stuff. It is. You're just like, ooh. Because when you've been on board, you're like, that's going to be at least 2 to 3 weeks in the yard, and that's probably going to take maybe a bit half a mil to fix that. You're like, oh. That's why I struggle with below deck, because when they do stuff, you know, like that, you're like, because you're in your head, you can work out how long that's going to be to fix.
Yeah, onus and dealing with schedules and time, and first thing when anything happens, you're just like, okay, that's a week, that's 2 weeks, that's 2 days, how long's it going to take?
Shit, where are we? What yard can we go to that's actually any good to be stuck in?
Yeah. But I think that there's the dynamics of yachting that I enjoy. Not that I enjoy people breaking things. But whatever it can be, is it's dropped on your toes. You're given a problem. Okay, how am I going to fix this problem? Shortest time possible. Keep everybody happy. And yeah.
How long do I have to say no to the boss that he can't come on? It's always the one we don't want to say. Yossi's are eternally yes people. We'll say yes, we'll give it a shot and see if we can do it.
Yeah.
And then if not, God help us, basically.
Exactly.
Damn it, there goes my bonus.
Sweat and no sleep.
What would you say the main differences are between, you know, cruise ship, obviously apart from they're run differently, like what would you say the stark differences are between yachting and working on a cruise ship?
I'd spend 90% of my time on a cruise ship on the bridge. So everything was bridge related. And obviously in yachting, you're very much out there on the go. But I think the biggest problem for me when I first joined yachting was time. I never, in cruise ships or commercially, I knew you're joining a boat in 2 months' time. This date, the boat's going to be in this port. You'll get off on this date, the boat will be in this port. You constantly, we're on a known time schedule. And my first season in yachting, I worked for an owner who changed his mind, like, as they say, like the wind. And we were on our way to Saint-Tropez, but we were going back to Monaco, and we were changing because we were going to Sardinia tomorrow. And the time schedule was what got me. And it did take me a while to get used to not knowing when I've been so strict with schedules. And even now in the industry, when you see deck crew or interior coming in, and I can see their frustration is, I thought we were going to Saint-Tropez. No, well, the boss changed his mind, we go to Portofino. Oh, it's like, well, it doesn't make any difference to you because you're just going to go to bed tonight in your cabin. But the element of not knowing, I think, is a big difference between yachting and commercial.
I think the element of not knowing is the exciting bit when you start.
Yeah.
The element of not knowing when you get a bit further along in your career is the annoying bit.
Yes.
And, you know, from my personal experience, I was on a boat and we were booked to go into Barcelona, and my now husband obviously was, you know, seeing me, and I'd been working all summer, and he was like, "You're going to be in Barcelona?" And I was like, "Yeah, we're going to be in Barcelona for 5 days. That's what's on the schedule." So he flew out and we got into port, and we picked up the guests, and the boss was like, "Nah, let's go." So, like, yeah. He was hoping that I'd maybe have an evening where I could duck off for a couple of hours, and literally we just turned around. Yeah. And I'm serving dinner, and literally the messages coming through my phone, "How could he do this to you? You need to say something." I'm like, "What?" Like, my husband had clearly no idea how yachts work. He's giving me all of this grief because he couldn't, you know, see me, which is, you know, it's cute, but during service, I'm like, just shut up. It's, you know, it's his boat. He goes wherever he wants.
Yeah.
You know, your life is not your own.
I think people, obviously, from the outside world don't see that importance. When you say, like, the guests want, and the dynamic changes 180 degrees, then for people who work in yachting, and the standards and the importance and what the guests want is what the guests get. Not all of the time, but most of the time. And they look as like they can't understand. I think until you live and work on a boat and have the experience, then you can only fully understand what yachting is like.
Yeah, it's, yeah. The fact that he said to me that, you know, you should tell your boss to stay in Barcelona, I'm like, you don't understand how it works, right?
That will never happen.
Be like, "All right, boss, how you doing? So the guy that I'm seeing wants to see me tonight. Can we go back?" Like, it's not... It doesn't work like that. So how have you... Obviously, you've been in the industry for quite some time. How have you found the work-life balance? Is there any balance?
Definitely. No, I've yet to have a full rotation. That's something that has, since 2016, we just about got a rotation. I got one rotation before COVID, and then COVID came along and all rotation was out the window. And then my last two jobs have been permanent. It has been difficult, and I think taking this time now is something that I needed to do. I always had the 30, everyone has the 30 mark, I'm sure, on their calendar. And I hit the 30 mark, and I got my ticket, got my master's license. I said, okay, I've got everything I need now in my bag to do what I need to, but now it's time to take more time for me, which I have done as more recently. But when I was working permanently and we'd still get holidays, I love traveling. So I've always been, okay, where am I off on my holidays? Go adventure, go see places. I enjoy that lifestyle anyway. I think people yachting have a similar experience, that they go home back to whatever the country they live in, and they sit down with their friends and say, "What have you done the last 6 months?" And it's like, "Oh, went on holiday for 2 weeks, been to work, and that's it." And after 2 days, I'm like, "Okay, I'm done here. Where do I go?"
Well, the problem, I mean, it's good that you did holidays, because a lot of yachties, you know, you in your time off, especially when you're on, you know, permanent, you might be on like, what, 5-1. You try and come home and you try and see as many people, and that's not relaxing. That's not chilling out. That's running around like a headless chicken trying to find and spend time with people that you haven't seen all year. Do you think the industry is now recognising that rotation is probably going to be the best way forward for everybody?
I definitely think at the moment when you speak about crew welfare, getting enough sleep, mental health, spending so much time on a boat with other crew, and that time can get to you. So you do need to have the relief, and maybe sometimes going 5-6 months is a little too much. Maybe a 3-1 rotation gives you that look at the end, like the light at the end of the tunnel, to say, okay, and I can recharge and I can take my time to see family, go home. And so many of the bigger boats are offering rotation, that smaller boats, not all smaller boats, a lot of them do offer rotation, but some smaller boats are losing out for crew heading for a rotational job. But I think my point of view, it's more like the welfare of the crew member.
I think when you're younger as well, when you first start out, you know, 5-1 is probably not too bad. You know, you're well into it. You know, it's a new job. You're travelling around. And also, you need the time to kind of get the routine bedded into you.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. I know I've spoken to another captain recently as well who said that they have started a 3-1 rotation on bigger boats, thinking that it would help, it would suit the industry, they would keep crew longer. And with a 3-1 rotation for deck crew and stewardesses, that they're not having enough salary. They get the 3-1 and then they go blow all their salary in their 1 month off that they've just made. So it's difficult in that sense. And then some people need sea time, so they don't want to sacrifice their time off. It's like a catch-22. You can't please everyone. Yeah.
No, I mean, that's like you said, I think with everybody talking about mental health and being more aware, you've just got to do what's right for you and be confident that you'll be able to get another job if you need to, you know. If it comes down to it, your boat's not that forgiving, there's always another job.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the yachting's quite... I joined a boat 2 years ago with the hope of staying there for the rest of my yachting career, and the owner sold it within 18 months. So it's never guaranteed.
No, never guaranteed. So what's, you know, exit strategy? Let's get down to the good stuff. What is your plan? Are you on board until retirement?
No, I obviously don't see myself doing this till I'm 60. But no. If someone told me now, oh, this is it, you're giving up yachting, I'd be like, hell no. I'm not ready to leave yachting yet. I've still got more adventure, more travelling, more experience, more to give. And that I think in 5 years, I'd say, I'd start to look somewhere at the end of the 5 years to find an exit. But I've kept my eyes open in shipyards, management, charter, just generally around yachting. In the last 5 years, even looking back, of what I enjoy most, what do I enjoy doing. I've met a lot of people who work with owners, the owners' reps, being on charter, who do the middle job between the owner and the shipyard, or the owner and going on charter. And I think that there's so many options available that I'm just keeping my ears and eyes open at the moment.
So what, in an ideal world, what would you like to do? You know, what, you'd be in it for what, next 5 years? The marriage, children, dog, house renovation?
No, well, first of all, with the job, as I said, I think I'd keep my eyes open. I wouldn't go into management. I think sitting in an office managing a boat would drive me insane. So it's more maybe hands-on with a shipyard or an owner's rep or something in that direction. I'd like to start giving back a little more as well to crew and to the yachting industry. And then personally, I'm on the travel train still, looking for a new house at the moment. I've kind of settled on Barcelona. That's been my my location, my hub for the last 3-4 years.
Nice.
So my rotation is going to be, well, my time off will be between travelling and living at what will be my new home. I'm currently
Barcelona. You better get in there quick. They're protesting about people coming.
I know. I'm one of those. The last 3 years.
Really? Have you been propping up the Airbnb business?
Yeah.
Yeah. It is one of, you know, it's one of, I mean, I spent a lot of time in Barcelona. Like, the port is lovely. It's, you know, it's a really nice place to be, and obviously the city is fantastic. Like, I have been there when they've been, you know, Barceloneta.
Yeah.
There was like tons of protesters, like the locals protesting, because obviously to buy a flat in Barcelona so now is like sky high, and the local community couldn't afford it, and they're like, foreigners out. I'm like,
Sorry, I've lost you.
Did that just disconnect?
Yeah, sorry. I got to the bit where you said buying a property in Barcelona is sky high.
Yeah, it was a big protest by the locals, because obviously before, Barcelona Marina was quite run down, and obviously these little communities lived there, and then obviously it's all been done up and a tourist location, and to buy a flat in Barcelona to obviously it's sky high, and if you want to keep your family together and all of that kind of stuff, so it's get in there quick before they stop you.
I know. Fingers crossed it all works out.
Yeah, well, you have ideas of where you might want to be, but then it just depends, doesn't it?
You'd end up marrying an Australian and living in on the Gold Coast, who knows.
That's also not a terrible place to be honest. You know, as yachties go, most locations are all right. The only one I probably wouldn't live in is, I was in Toulon, and I was like, I'm not in France. It's not really.
No, France is not my sole home. I think Spain is definitely where I'm supposed to be.
No. I mean, yeah, it's, but I always wanted to come home. Family, that's the main problem, isn't it? Your family aren't where you want them to be. I mean, I don't even live near my family now. They'd literally want me on the doorstep when I live 150 miles away. You never make them happy. Never.
No.
Being a traveller, that's one of the vices of being a traveller. So, going to stick at it for a little bit longer.
I am, yes. Hopefully back to sea soon. I've missed
it. Get back to sea soon. I was going to ask you, so like with, you know, obviously you've got it on the horizon, you know, in a few years' time. Have you thought about fertility, finance, obviously all of the things that we cover in Pearls of Wisdom? It's just trying to get women to start thinking about not just the job prospect, but the other life prospects, you know, the difficulty like leaving when you're gonna, I mean, you're choosing to go to Barcelona, which I imagine you kept up to date with your Spanish lessons. That's why you're keen to go.
I keep up to date with my Spanish. It gets me by when I'm there.
So you don't fancy a lovely Spanish individual? Marry, settle down, have Spanish babies?
we'll see what comes up. It's nice to have someone that's also not in yachting. I dated a guy recently who was somewhat in the industry but not in yachting, and it was nice to have that switch off after work because I think maybe if you are both in the same industry,
or on board.
Conversation can get a bit boring, or life evolves around yachts and boats, and you don't really want to.
No. And obviously, no offence to anybody who's listening that's is in a couple's relationship on board, but what do you talk about? That's not boat related.
Fresh.
Yeah. So yeah, are you starting to get all your ducks in a line beforehand? You know, pension, you know, boring stuff.
Yeah, no, Dad. I've been good generally in life with things like that. I started a pension a few years ago. I think it was about 27. And I've obviously spoken with you before about what I've been trying to set up, which is the global yachting. And one of the questions I put out to crew was, what information is lacking in yachting? And I think a lot of them come back with financial. They don't know how to get guidance on mortgages, finances, how to start pensions. So that's one of the things that I'm putting on the page, is to help people who are new to the industry or people in the industry, is to point them in the direction of people who can help them with their finances.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, obviously that's how Pearl started, was just trying to help people see. And also because there are so many dodgy characters out there. You know, yeah. It is a minefield, and then you just stick your head in the sand and you're like, oh, I'll deal with it later, kind of thing.
Yeah.
I want to buy a house. That was my plan. That was all as far as I got.
Yeah.
It's who to trust, you know, especially from yachties and the history of what's gone on. And then there's new things now like crypto, wine, people investing in wine. You know, part sharing a car. Like, I don't really understand, you know, where these ideas come from. But yachties, I don't know whether we're a bit susceptible to, like, gambling. Because some of these investments and things are literally like gambling.
Yeah. No, definitely they are. And you need to, as you say, put your investments in the right place with people that you trust. I've seen so many advertisements which is aimed at yacht crew joining the industry. Pay this club, pay this group, pay this for CVs, pay this to help get you a job. And it's, you don't know whether it's true, it's not true. I don't believe people should be paying other people to help them get a job or write CVs, or it's a lot.
Well, it's just, you know, you have got surplus cash, so if you don't want, you feel overwhelmed by writing your CV, you can get an individual to write your CV. But then, I never got anybody to write mine.
And I'm talking about people who are new to the industry as well, who are coming into the industry and they're just looking for the right guidance on what path to follow.
Yeah, it's there is also, you know, you take the fun out of it if you're going to get everybody to do it for you, if you know what I mean. It's nice to kind of, you know, go in there and make it happen yourself. So if you are listening that you're not on board yet, you can do it. You don't need anybody else's assistant, you know, if you're sharp enough to write your CV and stuff like that. And that's what boats want as well. They don't want you to just take the shortcut all the time, because you do have to problem solve, you do have to think on your feet, you do have to, you know, do these things for yourself. So it's been lovely talking to you. I think we could do maybe another episode on Wasash, to be honest, and the different career pathways that are out there, just to give a heads up to ladies, because they, you know, they could be on deck right now thinking, yeah, this is what I want to do, and not be aware that you could, you know, come off and go to somewhere like Wasash and build up the experience that way.
Yeah. No, for sure. That's part of hopefully what I'm putting together as well at the moment. So people just don't know it's there and that the option is there. So it's trying to get that information out to people early on to say, these are your options.
Yeah. So thank you very much for joining us today. Obviously, we will, any useful links that you want to pass on to ladies that want to maybe follow in your footsteps, please send them over to us, and we'll put those into the bio for this episode. But thank you for coming on. It's been a real pleasure talking to you.
No, thank you.
And if you've enjoyed this listening, if you're listening right now and you've enjoyed this episode, we'll have more details in the bio below. And if you've enjoyed listening to this episode, we've got a number of episodes out right now covering a lot of different topics, more amazing stories from different ladies. And if you want more information, we've got the Yacht Pearls of Wisdom app if you want to find any information on there. Obviously, all the social media platforms, we are on theirs as well. So thank you very much, and see you next time.